We're cooking with gas. That's an expression, an Australian expression, that usually means things are going pretty well. Many cooks will tell you gas is the best way to cook. You can turn it up and down quickly. I know they say electricity's, you know, some of the new stoves are nearly there, but I'm not sure about that. Anyway, there's a lot of talk about gas, way beyond kitchens, and in particular as a tremendous source of energy around the world. We've had programs in the last couple of months focusing on the gas boom in the United States. And now it's time to have a look and see what's happening with gas in Australia. And who better to tell us but Tony Wood from the Grattan Institute. Tony, thanks for joining us.
Amanda, you're very welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Getting gas right. That's what you name your article. Why on earth did you choose that topic?
Well, there are a lot of interesting challenges. And when we got involved in this particular exercise, because even though I have a background myself in gas, I really had never thought as to why it would be interesting, but there's a number of things going on that actually are quite fascinating, and I expect most people don't really appreciate, from the global gas revolution or the gas boom, as you said, in the United States, through to what's happening in Australia and the enormous controversy where people, very well-meaning people with real concerns, are worried about the development of gas and what it might mean for prices and what it might even mean for their communities in many parts of rural New South Wales and Victoria. So there's a whole range of issues that actually, for the first time in many years, potentially make gas interesting, which would be one way of getting other things off the front pages, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that's a perfect place to start, really, isn't it? What does this gas revolution mean for Australia? All this gas coming online hasn't turned out quite the way everyone expected, has it? So what does it mean for us locally?
It depends who we are. I mean, if you're those who are looking to export very large volumes of gas into Asia, which has an enormous appetite for energy, as you implied at the beginning of this conversation, and also what's really challenging is that in Japan, because of the terrible incident they had about 2.5 years ago in Fukushima, they thought for a while they'd get all their power stations back online again, and they shut down most of the nuclear power stations, but they haven't come back online. And the really interesting challenge, therefore, is that they're also buying gas and they're paying a very high price to pay it. So Australian producers of gas have seen the opportunity, are building effectively $60 billion worth of assets and resources, particularly in Queensland, to export gas.
$60 billion.
Now, that sounds fascinating. That sounds like a wonderful economic opportunity. Australia will become the third largest producer in the world, possibly even the largest past Qatar. $53 billion a year in export earnings will be generated from LNG within only a few years. This will be in a tremendous economic activity employing many, many thousands of people. Yeah. And obviously that's
positive. But does it mean higher prices?
Well, that's the interesting question.
Because if Japan's prepared to pay,
correct,
and I'm a gas producer, why shouldn't I take the highest price I can get? And why wouldn't that mean Australian prices will be higher?
Correct. And that's exactly what's happening. Because up until this enormous gas export opportunity coming from these liquefied natural gas facilities, particularly in Queensland, Australia's East Coast gas market really wasn't connected to the rest of the world. And so we had a pretty small manufacturing base, much, much smaller than the United States, for example. And there wasn't much gas development going on. And pretty much things stayed pretty steady. Gas was about $4 a gigajoule. A gigajoule is about, you know, if you live in Adelaide, you probably consume about 25 gigajoules a year. So the wholesale price of the gas is worth about $100. That's been pretty stable for 30 or 40 years. Suddenly everything changes because the export market is now open, and in Japan they are currently paying four times that for their gas. And so, as you said, the exporters are saying, well, if you want me to continue to supply gas, I'm going to send the gas to those who value it most. Who values it most? Right now, China, Japan, Korea. And therefore, yeah, that's so creating tension.
That's right. So we've gone global, but so has the gas price.
Yeah. And as a result of that, there's an enormous kerfuffle, not surprisingly, because for domestic gas consumers, this is a potentially big deal coming off the back of several years of very high increases in electricity prices. This means energy remains a very difficult political issue for governments. And there's a small number of very significant industries that use a lot of gas. Not a lot of them, but they're big. And for some industries, gas as an input to their manufacturing is a critical item. And having to pay a lot more for their gas is just as important to them as it would be to you and I who might use gas in our homes.
Yeah, well, I understand that if you look at the potential annual increases in household gas costs across the states, Victoria might be the most affected. But if you turn that around and say, well, let's have a look on the effect of higher wholesale prices on industry, then Western Australia jumps right to the front.
You're absolutely right. And Western Australia is a little different from what we were just talking about a minute ago. In Western Australia, because the government back in the late 80s, early 90s, put an awful lot of effort into encouraging very strongly the development of what many people might recognise as the Northwest Shelf projects, the government then, to get those projects off the ground, the government committed to take a very, very large volume of gas to underpin that investment. The result of that, because there was a large volume of gas, and in those days the export prices weren't quite so high, basically they effectively flooded the domestic market in Western Australia with gas, which meant that relative to the rest of Australia, Western Australians have used gas for a lot more industrial activity than we do in South Australia and further east. And so as a result of that, if you like, in some ways the Western Australian economy is much more gas intensive than the rest of us. And therefore, for them, the export price of gas is important. And they've been seeing gas prices creep up, not quite as dramatically as we've been talking about on the East Coast, but certainly steadily. And for WA, it is a big deal, for particularly a lot of big mining facilities and some of the light metals manufacturing, like aluminium and so forth.
Mm. Now, can I congratulate you for one of the best explanations of fracking? Everyone's talking about fracking these days. And yep. It's a long time since I've had an Aero chocolate, because I don't think they make them in dark chocolate, and I don't eat milk chocolate. But your explanation is the difference between fracking and other ways of getting gas is, in one case, you're trying to get the air out of a great big Easter egg, and it's, therefore you think, well, that's not too hard. Then in another case, you're trying to get it out of the bubbles in an Aero chocolate. And I thought, how clever are these people writing this article? So congratulations on that. It's a great way to communicate with people. But you do mention that I think we are a world leader in coal seam gas technology, but not so in technology for shale and what you call tight gas. Now, how far behind are we there?
We could catch up very quickly if we need to. We were in the mid to late 1990s. We weren't developing coal seam gas particularly strongly. People knew that there was coal in them, their coal seams, in Queensland particularly, for many, many decades, but there was not enough market to bother. It was really only the opportunity for exports that really drove the expansion of coal seam gas. And so very quickly, we took the technologies that had been developed in the United States, had some trouble initially, probably for 4 or 5 years before we knew how to apply them to the particular geological forms of rock or coal in Australia, because they're not all the same. I mean, coals aren't coals. And so working out how to get the gas out of the coal seams in Queensland was a bit different, but we got it right eventually. And now we do it very well, and now we're probably the world leaders. And nobody ever has developed large liquefied natural gas export facilities from coal seam gas before. It's going to involve hundreds and hundreds of small gas wells to do this, to get that gas out of the Aero chocolate, if you like. Now, shale gas is somewhat different. Shale gas is gas which is trapped in shale rock rather than coal seam. It's much deeper, several hundreds of metres is deeper, usually well below the water tables and so forth, much more tricky to get out, and it requires more water but doesn't produce all that much water. So it's a bit different. Now, we're doing some early work on this. We could be 5 years again behind the United States, only because there's been so much activity in the United States to get this right. And I would guess that if people really wanted and found the incentive to develop shale gas in Australia, then we could catch up quite quickly. But at the moment, we've got our hands full coping with coal seam gas and all the consequences that that has, both for technology and economics and for the social and environmental concerns that people in some parts of the country are quite concerned about. And remember, by the way, we've also got a moratorium on the use of fracking technology in Victoria. Now, there's a slight difference. It is not always necessary to use fracking to get the gas out. Sometimes, once people drill into those coal seams, they can get the gas to flow using other methods without fracking, without using this concept of forcing water and chemicals into the coal seams to help them open up the bubbles, if you like, or the little barriers between the bubbles to get that gas to really move. So in Victoria, we have the same issue as we do in New South Wales. Now, why do we have this issue? Well, because I think to some extent the industry got ahead of itself and it didn't sufficiently explain to people what the nature of the technology was. There were some proposals to drill for gas very close to high-quality agricultural areas, particularly in the Hunter Valley, which when you think about it, sounds a bit dumb to me, but anyway. And it's asking for trouble. And in addition to that, many people who, environmentalists, who are concerned about climate change, are sort of cautiously welcoming gas, because gas, when it's burned, produces less CO2 than coal, but it is a fossil fuel and it does produce CO2. And so if we were to expand gas rapidly and dramatically, the environmentalists concerned about climate change would say, well, yeah, thought gas was okay for a while, but now we're getting a bit nervous that gas might go on for too long and we'll never address climate change. So you've got this alignment of interest between people concerned about public health, people concerned about climate change, people concerned about anything at all, pretty strongly aligned. And as a consequence, I think governments, particularly in New South Wales and to some extent Victoria, and the industry have not done a great job.
There have been calls from some people to protect a portion of the supply so that Australians can have cheap gas. What do you say to that?
We have plenty of gas. The challenge is to get it where it's needed in the most effective and efficient way possible. And because of all these facilities that are being built, you develop a lot of gas and take a lot of gas over the next 3 or 4 years in Queensland. There is a concern they could suck up a lot of gas from the rest of Australia, gas which otherwise would have gone somewhere else, particularly into New South Wales. Now, people can think about the east coast of Australia. Queensland has got its own source of gas, all this coal seam gas in the Bowen Basin coal seams. Victoria and South Australia have their own source of gas in traditional or conventional gas, where the gas is, if you like, in that Easter egg you talked about before. But New South Wales doesn't have or has not had its own or significant amount of its own gas, and it's dependent on pipelines getting gas into New South Wales. The concern is that as these big LNG facilities in Queensland start sucking up all this gas, that vacuum cleaner is going to suck all the gas out of the rest of the East Coast. Victoria and South Australia will look after themselves, and New South Wales will be left without gas. Now, that means that people are very keen to solve that problem by developing coal seam gas, or alternatively, those who are the other side of it, very worried about that problem, are saying, well, you better keep some gas for us, whoever we are. And the real issue isn't not that there's not enough gas. The real issue is, how do we make sure that the gas can be developed and brought to market as quickly as possible so we don't run out of gas? And that means commercial deals. And that you go right back to the beginning where you said quite clearly, and I agree with you 100%, why wouldn't the producers sell gas to those who will pay the most for it? The answer is, if the domestic consumers are prepared to pay the higher price, then of course they will get gas and the producers will develop the gas. However, that price will be significantly higher than we've been used to paying on the east coast of Australia before, and it's the price that's causing the tension as much as it is the volume.
Now, one can understand why a number of producers, because when you're talking, you know, tens of billions of dollars of investment, you can understand why producers say, well, look, let's get together and develop this together. But as I understand it, you've got some concerns about that if it means they would then want to market together as well. They can have a joint development but not joint marketing.
We've got a pretty mature market now with not as many suppliers and customers as there are in the United States by any means, but enough. And so we would say that it's about time that anti-competitive arrangements basically become a thing of the past. And even though we might still have producers sharing costs, they should be able to market their gas separately and should be encouraged to do so. And that would start to give some transparency to the gas market, because if you're a gas customer, people would know if you're a customer of anything. There's nothing worse than dealing with a monopoly, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
I mean, people says there's only one price. This is what you've got to buy, take or to leave it. Nobody likes that. So the issue is to try and develop some competition and give customers some real choice.
Indeed. Tony, I used to subscribe to a journal from the United States called Vital Speeches when I first got into Parliament. It was a collection of what this company thought were the best speeches around the United States in that fortnight. So it was a good way of keeping up with a wide range of issues. And I remember reading about a gentleman who'd done what they call a commencement speech. I think it means by the end of year at university or something.
Yep.
And he cited the shortest speech that had ever been given, where a gentleman who agreed with you, obviously, stood up and said, you know, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, whatever, and then commenced his speech, and it went like this: compete, compete, compete. And then he sat down. And I think you're right. If we have transparency in the gas industry and competition in the gas industry, the customer, the consumer, you and I, with our woks over the stove, will be better off. Thanks for joining us, Tony.
You're welcome.
And Tony Wood is the Grattan Institute Energy Program Director, and the report he co-wrote is called Getting Gas Right, Australia's Energy Challenge. And we will, of course, provide a link to it on our website, which is also where you go if you want to hear the program again, leave a comment or make a suggestion. That's abc.net.au/rn, and follow the prompts to Counterpoint. Well, that's us for this week. We've had some time together. Thanks for your company. I'm Amanda Vanstone, and until next time, arrivederci.